on an overview of facts, particularly with regard to the object of facts, the market in which it plays. That part of the presentation will be presented by Ms. Nzimela from the CEO of Saks. We will then explain the separation, the transaction to separate Saks from Transnet. We will touch on aspects of the bill, the implementation, Transnet focusing on its core freight services, and disposing of its non-core activities. Saks is considered as South African Airways to be a non-core activity of Transnet's freight business. And if we conclude the transaction to separate Saks from Transnet, it will contribute to the conclusion or completion of the Saks turnaround strategy. And gear it towards a focused freight services enterprise. Excuse me. Although Saks has been an enterprise under the Transnet holding company structure, it's not as if the department has had no contact or relationship. Obviously, indirectly, the state has had the ownership of the company. So in this regard, the Saks transaction is different from other sale and purchase transactions. It's a, one could call it a restructuring within a group context. Just to highlight to the committee that the transaction or the approval from Cabinet to proceed with the transaction, the separation of Saks was taken on the 18th of April 2007. At that time, we were also given the mandate, or the our minister was given the mandate to serve as shareholder representative. It was approved that it be a standalone state-owned enterprise and that we could proceed with a submission to Parliament for adoption. After securing Cabinet approval, we proceeded with the publication of the bill. That was on 11 May 2007. The department itself received no comments to the published bill. As a consequence, the department did not introduce any changes to the bill that was submitted to Parliament. So the bill that was up to Cabinet, the bill that was submitted to Cabinet is exactly the same bill that was certified by the state law advisors. Just before CESA proceeds with her part of the presentation, just to also indicate that despite the fact that we had not received any comments on the bill, as a consequence of the discussions with regard to the Infraco bill and similar provisions being contained in the Saks bill, the department has prepared a proposal to amend certain provisions to bring it in line with the changes to the Infraco bill. But in terms of substantive changes, the department has made no changes. It's still is exactly as submitted to Cabinet and to the State Law Advisors. We haven't made any changes to the bill as yet. As I said, these are recommendations that we're bringing to the committee today. Cesar, if you can indicate to me when I should move on with the slides, if you could proceed.
Okay. What I want to address this morning, again, I mean, is the whole issue in terms of, I mean, where does SA Express actually fit in the overall aviation, I mean, industry? And what we've actually, I mean, tabled, I mean, in our presentation is really just to provide an explanation in terms of, I mean, the differences, I mean, between the airlines that we have, I mean, in the domestic environment. And we explain the fact that, I mean, obviously airlines are categorized into three main categories, being the mainline carriers, the low-cost carriers, and the regional carriers. And a mainline carrier typically, I mean, obviously would be something similar to South African Airways, which is legacy carriers with very large hubs. So, I mean, they operate, I mean, from big hubs such as Johannesburg and Cape Town. And you can see that, I mean, in terms of, I mean, the current SAA operation. Low-cost carriers, I mean, example of which is Mango, is a carrier, obviously, with a single club service, with minimal, I mean, frills, but also operating on large volume routes, such as, I mean, Johannesburg, Cape Town, Johannesburg, Durban, and so forth. Regional carriers, such as ourselves, I mean, South African Express, are what we call, I mean, feeder airlines. So we would actually operate, I mean, to the smaller destinations, such as Bloemfontein, Richards Bay, Kimberley, feeding into the bigger hubs. Okay. So typically, I mean, feeder carriers, I mean, like today, what we do is that we go into the thinner routes that we operate on and feed into hubs, both in Johannesburg and Cape Town, where then SAA is able to transport those passengers further onto international routes. We provided a brief explanation in terms of, well, possibly repeating what I've already said, that, I mean, typically, I mean, we're operating on thinner routes, shorter routes, and the fact that, I mean, we are, in most cases, less vulnerable to currency fluctuations because there's less dependency on the leisure traffic. You would also find that, I mean, typically regional carriers also operate a high portion of the capacity into markets where there's little or no competition. This is obviously as a result of the gates that we operate. Not that, I mean, you know, I mean, other people, it's not possible for any other airline, I mean, to operate, I mean, to the smaller destinations that we operate to and still be able, I mean, to break even or make, I mean, a profit onto those routes. So, I mean, the importance of a regional carrier is also to have the right gauge, which we have. I mean, SA Express, I mean, operates, I mean, between 50-seaters, and our largest aircraft is a 74-seater. So we stick to that market, and we don't operate anything larger than that. What we do is provide frequency into those smaller markets with that smaller gauge. And that's how, I mean, the operations actually run. In terms of, I mean, where we see ourselves, I mean, into the future, we do believe that we still have a huge role to play in building a much stronger, I mean, feeder airline. And we have actually demonstrated, particularly in the domestic market, that we're able, I mean, to provide a good feeder service, I mean, to the smaller destinations. But I do believe that there is, I mean, still a lot of work, you know, that SA or a role for SA Express to actually expand into the region as well and play a very similar role. In terms of, I mean, an example of that is that even today, in terms of the routes that we operate to on the region, we don't operate to what would be described as primary routes. And just maybe, I mean, to explain that a bit further, is that let's take an example of the DRC, you know, where both ourselves and SAA operate. Typically what would happen is that SAA focuses on what they call a primary route, which is Johannesburg Kinshasa. SAA Express has started an operation to a secondary, I mean, point, which is Lubumbashi. But it's a critical point, you know, I mean, to actually service. Because today, in fact, you know, internally within the DRC, people still have to go from Kinshasa to Johannesburg, and then from Johannesburg on SAA Express to Lubumbashi. And yet they should be actually have the ability to be able, you know, to go direct between their own, you know, country. So we are able, I mean, to provide that type of service. It doesn't make sense for any larger carrier because, I mean, it's operationally not viable. So that's the critical role, I mean, that we believe that we shall continue to provide, I mean, going into the future as SAA Express. We do talk about the fact, and sometimes, I mean, we ask the question, which is why, I mean, we've actually addressed it in terms of saying that we are not a low-cost carrier, which is what I explained up front in terms of the differences between regional carriers and low-cost carriers. However, you know, as SAA Express, you know, internally, we have chosen to adopt low-cost carrier principles. And all that basically means is that, I mean, we are obviously continuously looking at reducing our costs in the business in order to remain competitive and be able to you know, to offer, I mean, a much wider route network. And, of course, I mean, we continuously intend, I mean, to provide better efficiencies in terms of our maintenance and in all other areas, I mean, in the business.
Chair, as far as the transaction of separation is concerned, similarly to South African Airways, I've explained SAX will become a standalone enterprise. We are, our strategy is to integrate SAX into the reasons why we have decided to treat SACS as a standalone state-owned enterprise and not integrate it into South African Airways is, first of all, such an integration or merger may have competition implications. SACS itself has achieved a turnaround that is sustainable and profitable as a standalone unit. It has a very specific focus and mission, which is not exactly the same as that of South African Airways. Caesar's presentations explained that it serves a secondary market rather than necessarily a primary market. Its potential to provide a regional service offering is especially noted, and we want to expand that. And as a consequence of all these reasons, we feel that the focus of the South African Airways as an airline and its management is distinctly different to that of SACS. As far as the transaction itself is concerned, the department has set up a transaction committee, which includes Transnet, South African Express Airways, and the National Treasury. The committee has progressed quite far in terms of the transaction, in terms of valuation processes, due diligence that has been completed and is the process of being validated. The due diligence process essentially determines which are the assets and liabilities that are to be transferred in the process of sale. We have not yet, the transaction documents have not yet been signed. The process of processing the bill and the transaction documents will basically run parallel. That is as far as the background is concerned, Chair. If you agree, I can just give you a broad overview of the bill before we go clause by clause. I've already given you the background in terms of the parliamentary process publication. The purpose of the bill is to provide, basically to provide for the transfer of the Transnet shares, interests and claims in SACS to government, as well as the future conversion of SACS into a public company should that be required. When we come to the discussion of the changes that we recommend, you will note that we are just extending the long title purpose to correspond with the provisions in the bill. The bill records that the main object of SACS is to engage in passenger airline and cargo transport services, air charter services and other related services in South Africa and the African continent. The bill limits SACS's operative scope to the African continent and surrounding islands. So, in other words, it's not anticipated that SACS would operate intercontinental flights such as South African Airways. In defining the object of and limitations of scope of SACS, we purposefully tried to distinguish it from the South African Airways operations. It has already been explained that SACS will achieve this by using smaller gauge aircraft than the mainline low-cost and low-cost airlines. SACS will have, in terms of the provisions that we have in the bill, will have the same borrowing powers as South African Airways and subject to the provisions of the PFMA. The implications of the bill is that it will authorize statutorily the transaction to separate SACS. It will allow, if should the decision, a policy decision arise in future, for SACS to be converted from a Pty Limited to a public company, SACS will continue to run its business as usual. The transaction itself, other than the shareholder oversight, won't have any immediate impact on SACS and its ability to continue its business. We have provided, as in the case of Infraco and as in the case of South African Airways, for SACS to be classified as a Schedule 2 major public entity. I need to emphasize that by virtue of the fact that SACS is currently a wholly owned subsidiary of Transnet, and Transnet is a Schedule 2 entity, SACS in its current form and operation is a recognized Schedule 2 entity in terms of the Public Finance Act. It's not a Schedule 3B. The same was the case with South African Airways, and as a consequence, we are believed, and particularly because of its commercial nature, that it should continue being a Schedule 2 entity. In conclusion, Chair, we believe that this transaction and passing of this bill will certainly allow South Africa, Transnet, to continue focusing its business on its core activities, and focus its investment program, and continue to recover its balance sheet. At the same time, we believe it will bring certainty and clarity to SACS in terms of its mandate to implement its strategy, not only as a secondary point airline in regional airline in South Africa, but very importantly to expand its ability to contribute to regional traffic on the continent. The limitations that we set on scope, we believe, provide the necessary protection that it doesn't become ambitious and we have another South African Airways. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, I lost you. What did you say at the end? I was distracted.
Chair, you will recall that when I discussed the object of SACS, I said we also provide in the bill that SACS's scope, geographic scope, is basically South Africa and the African continent and the surrounding islands. So its distinctive characteristic is that it's regional, it's African, and it's not necessarily intercontinental airline. And we believe that that supports a constraint on it not becoming another South African airway.
We made it here in the bill, the geographic.
And we'll cover that when we go to the bill.
Okay. Thank you. That's the last sentence I lost you on.
Okay.
Chair, can you ask questions?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Why can't you?
No. I just asked because I was a little bit late. Sorry, my apology, but I was already too late. Chairperson, the first question just on page 3 of the presentation. You refer to the say that SAC is not a low cost carrier. Now, if it's not a low cost carrier, the profit. How do you on what basis is the profit then determined? And the second thing is, who are the competitors at this stage? Or are there no competitors so that you prices can fluctuate on a higher level? My second question is the capacity at this stage. What is the capacity in terms of reservations? The flights, 80-70% as an average when they fly, the capacity of the reservations in all the different flights. If you can just give an average, because that might also give an indication of what your profit might be. The third question, Chairperson, is on the next page we talk about airlines to pursue joint ventures. African airlines. Which African airlines are interested? Are they already ventures or ventures to be just after the exception of the bill? And the last question, Chair, on page 6, the question of Schedule 2 or 3B. Why not 3B? Because with 2, Treasury is not involved. If it's a 3B schedule, then also Treasury has been involved. Is this to give more leverage to SACS whenever it runs into a problem that you can just borrow money and at the end of the day it becomes liability to the taxpayer again? Why not the Schedule 3B? If you can just tell us what was the final decision to make it a Schedule 2 and not 3B. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the first number of questions are operational. We have the benefit of Caesar here, so I would suggest you to respond to that, and I'll respond to the VFMI next.
I believe the first question was that, we're not a low-cost carrier, so how can we ensure that, we are profitable? We're not a low-cost carrier, and in fact, the reason why, I actually highlighted the fact that we may not be a low-cost carrier, but we operate on low-cost principles, is precisely because, I mean, we want to make sure, or we, in terms of our fares, they're very competitive to what the low-cost carriers actually offer in the marketplace today. So you're not likely, I mean, to find, I mean, obviously, I mean, we have a booking system, a reservation system that would open up, I mean, a certain number of buckets at certain prices, and that's a concept that's applied even by the low-cost carriers today. But if you look in terms of our pricing, we're very, very competitive to the low-cost carriers. In order for us to be competitive, you know, and offer prices which are quite similar, you know, to the low-cost carriers, that's why, I mean, there are certain things, I mean, that we're trying to adopt within our environment, which is quicker turnaround. Because if you do quicker turnaround, and that's one of the things I talk about in terms of principles of low-cost, quicker turnaround means that you can have a higher utilization of your aircraft. And obviously, I mean, the aircraft is our most expensive asset. Okay. So that's what I was actually trying to allude to when I talked about not being a low-cost carrier, but if we are going to be offering competitive fares to those secondary markets that even low-cost carriers do not operate to, then at least we need to be able to reduce our costs internally. In terms of competitors, yes, I mean, you would find that, I mean, on certain routes there is no competition today. And there isn't any competition, not because, I mean, competition has not been allowed to come onto the route, but precisely because, I mean, we are the only people at this point in time with the right gauge to be able to operate into those markets. It would not actually make sense. You can't go and operate at 737-800, for example, to Richards Bay. You can't even land the aircraft, you know, on the short runway. So it's the type of gauge and aircraft type that we operate that actually results in us being the only operator on certain routes. But today, I mean, the majority of our routes, we do have competition, and especially on the regional side. It may not be a South African carrier, but there is a competitor from the other country as well who operates onto that route. In terms of, I mean, on capacity, you know, offhand, I mean, I'll tell you right now that, I mean, possibly, I mean, we're operating in the last couple of months, we've had, I mean, a very high load factor, so we are actually, on average, have load factors of between 65% and 75%. When I talk about average, what would typically happen is that you'd find that, I mean, the morning flight to a route such as Johannesburg, Bloemfontein, would be full, because, I mean, you know, that's the business traffic traveling. Later in the day, the flights are less full. You'd find that we're going out, I mean, with 30% or so forth. But in the morning, we may very well be going out with 80%. But on average, if we average out, I mean, right through our system, we're probably sitting at about 65 to 70% load factor.
What's the norm, I mean, for a successful airline? What would it be, the load?
Well, I don't think there's so much a norm, except for, let me explain it this way. All of these things, I mean, the fact of the load factor also depends on the cost of your operation. If your costs are lower, then you probably don't need such a high load factor. If you have high cost of operation, then you need a high load factor in order, I mean, to be, you know, to break even. So it is a factor of a number of issues, which is why for us, you know, trying to reduce our costs is a critical part of our business. You know, and even the type of aircraft that we operate, or the choice of aircraft that we operate, you know, I mean, is a well thought through decision, because, I mean, it has to be, you know, at the lowest cost possible. Otherwise, you would be looking for extremely high load factors in order to be able to break even. I think there was also a question in terms of, I mean, regional partnerships, and whether we intend to or only talk to people subsequent to the African Airlines. Well, I can tell you right now that, I mean, we've already been approached, I mean, by a couple of airlines. I mean, specifically, I mean, right now, I mean, we've been approached, I mean, by Malawi. In fact, two carriers out of Malawi that have asked to actually partner up, I mean, with SA Express. The same applies, I mean, in the DRC. We have been approached by carriers in the DRC as well to look at a partnership, I mean, with SA Express. So we're not talking about in the future possibly looking at whatever. We've had all of these requests, you know, at this point in time, that we have not, at this point, been able to respond to. I don't know if that answers all your questions.
And then about the scheduling?
The reason why we are recommending that SAS continues to be a Schedule 2 entity is informed by its commercial operations. You will recall that when we discussed the differences between a Schedule 2 and a 3B entity, One of the distinct differences, for instance, was the matter of decision making on opening foreign bank accounts, cash management. You cannot run an airline if you cannot open foreign bank accounts. You cannot open, you cannot run an airline if you have to, if you don't have flexibility in terms of the cash management. As far as the borrowing powers are concerned, keep in mind a Schedule 2 entity has to disclose its borrowing plan. The Schedule 2 entity remains subject to the financial policies that the Minister of Public Enterprises, in this case, would dictate to the airline. So it's not as if a Schedule 2 entity has unbridled authority to run around and just borrow money. In fact, it's quite an engaged process. Currently, Saxis and Caesar could perhaps just confirm that Saxis' gearing is such that it can operate on its balance sheet. They require some capitalization. They've never been capitalized, by the way. They've never been capitalized by Transnet. In terms of its operational, commercial operational demands, we believe it really cannot operate as an airline and as a Schedule 3B entity. Keep in mind that the type of activities that Saxis is involved with is high. Although she's indicated that in terms of the regional airline market, it's not as competitive as the low-cost airline market. But it is a dynamic, fluctuating market which requires very swift decision-making, which we just cannot anticipate happening in a 3B context.
Chairperson, just to follow up on this, when we come back to the profitability of the airline, it's been said that although it's not a low cost, the profits is fine. And it seems as if Saxis is managed quite well at this stage. Now, why then is it necessary to say for commercial operational demands, we need to schedule two, we need to open them, access the markets and borrow some money? If you are profitable, why? I mean, this is not synchronized with the two statements, do not synchronize with each other. On the one hand, it's profitable, but we want to have a road open to get some money from the markets. Why was the Schedule 2, 3D, Treasury, well gazetted the business plan or the approach for finances? In Schedule 2, it's only the Minister of Public Enterprises without Treasury. And it might lead that you end in a situation where you where the market changed, where there's more competitors, and you've got a loan somewhere on the market, and you need to pay back, and then you go back to the taxpayer with an open end. That's my main concern, the whole thing between a 3 and a 2 and a 3B, because then with the 2, Treasury as a watchdog is out of the picture. And so if you can just answer me on that, and why do you want to have that alternative of an open road to the financial markets if you operate on a profitable basis?
Chair, I think just to clarify, Saxis is currently operating as a Schedule 2 entity, not as a 3B entity. In fact, if Saxis were to operate currently as a 3B entity, I don't know how it would be operating as an airline. It won't be actually be operating. It's not a 3B. It's a Schedule 2.
No,
all
no.
We're saying is it must continue being a Schedule 2.
I
don't think there's a contradiction.
No, Chair, what I'm saying, why not the 3B? I'm standing for a 3B, not a 2. The question is, if it's a 2, Treasury is not in the picture. If it's a 3B, Treasury will have to detect it. Then Treasury is also involved in the approval, etc. As it is now, it's only the minute.
Can I just intervene here? Look, firstly, Sandra, can I clarify? In the actual bill, interestingly, it doesn't say where the Schedule 2 or a Schedule 3B. It simply says borrowing powers of SACS, and it says subject to the Public Finance Management Act, SACS may borrow money. But it doesn't actually spell out which schedule it's in. Is that correct? Firstly.
Chair, you're absolutely correct, but that's one of the recommendations that we would like to make to you, that depending on the decision of as to whether we will address the scheduling in the InfraCobalt. We believe that, for instance, as in the case of South African Airways, we need to address the scheduling in this bill as well. So we would be making a recommendation to you that it should be a Schedule 2 and it should be gazetted in this bill.
Okay, the next thing I want to ask you, we'll come back to you in a moment, Ronnie. In the South African Airways bill, can we distribute the act that we passed to members as well? Okay, it was passed in the first quarter of this year. Shall we all rise, Eugenia Chang is here? I'm sorry we started before you came. We sincerely apologize. Next time we'll phone you and check what that is coming. Okay, I'm teasing Eugenia. Eugenia, you're more than welcome. The point I want to make is in the South African Express Act as it now is standard, did we actually spell out which schedule SAA will be in?
Chair, we said that SACS's powers will be as in Schedule 2, but we did not provide for the amendment of Schedule 2 as such.
No, I'm talking about South African Airways.
South African Airways, yes, we did
provide. What did it say there?
We provided that under the objects of the Act, and in, let me just get the provision 9, we provided for SAA to be listed as a Schedule 2 entity.
And that was done with the consent of Treasury?
That's right. This was approved by Cabinet.
Okay. Then why didn't you do the same in the version that went to Cabinet? In other words, why is the Executive, well, why is the Minister coming now and saying it should be spelled out clearly that it's a Schedule 2 rather than 3B, given that you just process through our committee the South African Airways Act?
Chair, let me just correct my phraseology. If you, the wording in the South African Airways Act...
I've actually got my bag and I meant to read last night to check the, you know, the synergy, but I just didn't get the time. But in any case...
No. Yeah. The wording in the South African Airways Act is, it actually has a specific provision that amends the PFMA. At the time that we processed the SACS bill, we were still in the discussions with the National Treasury, and we had put in a, let's say, a pointer or a flag that we wish SACS to be also be a Schedule 2 entity, but we did not provide for the amendment of the PFMA. And that's the reason why. The wording, for instance, in the SACS bill that you have is in 6.3, the powers of SACS are set out in Schedule 2. That's the wrong one.
Yeah,
that's the company's act.
I couldn't find it in my bag until this morning when I was digging to get it. I suddenly realized I put it in the wrong file. I shouldn't say that in front of you, actually, the wrong file, because it might reinforce something you said about me yesterday. But the point is, can I raise this point, Sandra? It's because it's germane to the debate. And I really think this committee must take a formal decision about this. We are absolutely categorically clear. We are excruciatingly clear that the issue about scheduling must be dealt with by Cabinet and there must be agreement within Cabinet on this. And what comes to Parliament must actually be an outcome of the Cabinet process. Now, here again, we're getting an insertion now about Schedule 2. But I want to ask you a question. If we were not to spell out clearly what schedule it is, wouldn't I take it, or the committee take it, it will remain as a 2? Because that's what it is at the moment. And presumably, National Treasury appreciates that, because when the bill went through Cabinet, Minister of Finance, Sir Emmanuel, would have seen this bill, and presumably understood that what is there in Clause 7 provides for it to be a Schedule 2 in effect. Let's say we did amend Section 7. What would happen? It would remain a 2, won't it?
Gee, not necessarily. A narrow interpretation of the PFMA would suggest that it would not be categorized, and we would then have to go through a process. During the interim period, it would probably de facto proceed as a Schedule 2 entity. But the PFMA is also not clear. It was never anticipated at the time that the PFMA was drafted that we would have these type of transactions. So it's quiet about that. But another interpretation of Schedule 2 of the Act is that it's only those entities that are listed from 1 to 19 and in 20 subsidiaries of those entities. And if SACS becomes a standalone state-owned enterprise, it will not, under the Transnet umbrella, function as a Schedule 2 entity.
It might be more tenable to suggest it will become a 3P, won't it? Because, in effect, what would happen is, because it's not specifically listed in 2, one just takes it that it's a 3P. Because the Act, as I recall, having read it on Sunday, PFMA, says the minister can amend a Schedule 3 list. But as we understood the Act, and as your counsel, I mean, I must tell you, I think I should put on record, I'm not necessarily impressed with either of the two submissions we got from counsel. If it was really a vigorous issue in this committee, we wouldn't accept that. We would give it to Parliament's lawyers and others to look. That's not a very strong opinion. I say this because although I'm not a lawyer, I have had to read many, many council opinions during the time I was chair of local government. Remember, we were dealing with Chapter 7. Very sensitive issues about what is the latitude of local government powers and functions. So I'm very familiar with the quality of council opinion. And the one actually is pretty weak, if I may say so, and I have the right to say so. This is Parliament. The other one is mediocre. So, you know, I really feel you must look for better opinion, really. Even I'm a non-lawyer, I could see glitches in it. But so I'm not so impressed with the quality of what you gave us on the infracopo, but that's for you to decide. I can't prescribe to you which lawyers you get. But I think this committee should be aware that the council opinion, I hope some people read it, and I would like Bongi Nkosi Kolwane to read it if he's a lawyer. I would like you, Bonani, to read it if you have it. I'd like your opinion. It's not a strong opinion. Both the submissions you gave me. One is weak, the other is mediocre.
Right.
Now, the next point to make is, look, at the moment, can I ask you a practical question? Is National Treasury in agreement with you that it should be a 2?
On both SACS and Infraco, as you are aware, the matter is still to be resolved at the executive level.
I thought it's just Infraco.
No, in both, unfortunately, the process became conflated, and so I cannot categorically state to you that we have an agreement on SACS being a Schedule 2 entity. However, in the discussions with National Treasury up to now, they have acknowledged the fact that SACS operates is not an infrastructure company. And the airline market is a market which requires very swift decision making as well, even more so than in the case of Infraco, where swift decisions have to be taken on a day to day basis, especially as far as cash management and hedging is concerned.
All right, can I raise a question? Money. Let's leave this thing in abeyance, right? But your point is noted. Do any members want to speak before I seek to summarize the views of the ANC study group as I know them based on the discussions we've had on Infraco? And it is not a hard and fast thing. Members have until next Friday to change their views, and we will discuss it in our study group. Come back to me, sir. Will you remind me? Kyle, we put it on the agenda for the study group. When is it? On Tuesday? Yeah, we put it on the agenda. Please remind me, both of you. But for now, Sandra, you want to say something quickly before I suggest a way forward?
Just a quick clarification. I think the statement that National Treasury is out of the way is actually a bit of an overstatement. I don't think it's factually correct. National Treasury does receive the borrowing plan of Schedule 2 entities. It receives quarterly reports on the progress of that borrowing plan. There are regular exchanges between ourselves and National Treasury. The distinct difference between the two is that in the case of the 3B, there is a potential of a stop-go type of intervention by National Treasury, which does not exist in the case of the Schedule 2. A stop-go type of intervention, I think, will have a material impact on an airline. But please, on knowing the operations, should perhaps just expand on that. But I just want to make it quite clear that it's not true to say that National Treasury has no role to play in Schedule 2 entities.
No, I think that's the answer. Do you want to say something?
Except that, I mean, as a person who's in the business, I can clearly tell you right now that, I mean, should the airline be changed from being a Schedule 2, it would be basically as good as killing the airline. The reason for that is that, in the airline industry, it's already been indicated, you do need to actually quickly respond, to the dynamic environment. A typical example is that, let's talk about even if you want to expand into a particular area, that requires you to actually bring in aircraft. Okay? Aircraft, you can't decide today and bring in an aircraft and get it 3 months later. It takes a good, couple of months. And everybody is sitting there waiting for all these assets. So you don't have the ability to be, and each day it costs you more money. We, in our business, already had an experience of that, where you find that just postponing a decision by 2 or 3 months can actually cost the company far more. Not that the decision wasn't finally made, but just the timing of the decision, taking, 3 months, cost us, a substantial amount of money at the end of the day. It's just not possible. So I would actually say that, really, from an SA Express, perspective, should it go that route, I think there would have to be acknowledgement that, from the decision makers that, this is the way that the airline would not be able to survive.
Chairperson, I don't think it's true. I mean, all the departments, all government, on all three tiers of government levels operate under an MTEF, a medium term expenditure framework. If you've got proper planning, if you've got proper management, and a proper business plan, you know exactly what type of aircraft you need on which date and what. So you need to know exactly on which time you have to apply for money or to make more profits or whatever to run your business like any private business. 3B does not mean it will take longer to take money. It's only the Treasury will play a more important role. If it's only a 2, it can only be issued to the minister. The minister can just issue the business plan, and they get the money and they carry on. But if you've got proper business, like the MTF that we all need to do, as the Public Finance Management Act also spelled out, there's no way to be concerned or to worry about that you won't get money soon enough from any financial markets. If your planning is properly and good, then whether it's a 2 or a 3B, there's no difference. The only benefit for the government and for the taxpayer and for the general public is when it's a 3B, then Treasury has to gazette it so there's more concern from Treasury to approve or not to approve. If it's the other way around, the minister can just come back to Parliament with the budget and say, listen, we need this and this money for SA Express if ever it runs into a loss. And we can't accept
that. Right. Yeah, I think does anybody want to say anything else?
I just wanted to say, unless I don't know what I'm getting confused with the Schedule 2 and Schedule 3. Yeah. To me, when it was said previously, it was connected with the transition. Unless we also, I thought when we were talking about it in this context here, we were trying to say, if Sanex is a practice also in the process of development of a business that is developing, now that is going to get a legal status, and then from a business point of view, it's going to be very, very difficult for it to quickly assume the status that is going to give it a strong one. It needs to go to a transition. I think that's what the finance treasurer was saying, that at least it needs some sort of assistance and oversight closely by this, by finance. So, but that's not the permanent phase for it. It's a transitional phase. And that's the way my understanding. But not that yet. You see, it seems to me that it's taking it out of context.
Okay, so you're there.
Mr. Chairman, from Leighton from DPE. I think one should recognize that SACS has emerged as a successful business. It has achieved a turnaround within the Schedule 2 categorization. And the business of the airline industry is very, very dynamic. So whilst I appreciate the MTFF processes, it is just too long. And you need to be more dynamically responsible or reactive to the markets. And you cannot plan 3 years ahead in most cases. So I would recommend that you have a responsible management here that has proven their case. They have achieved a turnaround and become a very successful business in very difficult circumstances. As opposed to the oversight of National Treasury, SACS has a board of directors which has overseen its development into a successful operation. And I think the closeness of that board in overseeing the general direction of the company has large merit. I think that oversight plays a significant role in the direction of the company, which will be interrupted if those decisions are only taken by National Treasury. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, okay. Can I just suggest the way forward? And let me just summarize. In conversation, the ANC can intervene if I'm not accurately representing our earlier discussion. One is, I think we should be very clear, Sandra. It's about process. I think this committee should take a very, very strong position on this matter. And I should speak to the minister again on our behalf if we agree. We are not going to ever have a bill again where the issue of the scheduling is not collectively decided on by cabinet. I think we should even put in our report that we should return the bill. I think it's unfair to dump this on parliament. It's irresponsible, really. Because, you see, for us to fully decide, I would like to call in an expert of the equivalence of the people you have, Sandra. Not fair. On the airline industry. I don't fully understand what money is saying. I mean, I understand it, but I don't. In other words, for me to make a considered decision, for Robert to make a considered decision, for even money to make a considered decision, being an economist and whatever, the truth of the matter is, it's not fair for you to expect us to fast-track a bill. Secondly, that you come here not having, in the cabinet process, finalized the scheduling. And then you're dumping it on Parliament. Well, then the committee must be given 6 months to bring in experts, A, on the airline industry, B, I would like, and I'm sure the committee will agree, for us to bring in an expert on the PFMA. We can't hear you alone in National Treasury. Parliament, Mr. Ntwana here is a lawyer, but he's not an expert, either in the airline industry or the Public Finance Management Act. So you must give us 6 months to hire an expert. Usually take 6 months for Parliament to approve or something like that in any case. So really you should give us a year if this is what you want in Parliament. So we do our job properly. So I really feel, I'm really feeling very strongly now. It's actually now reaching a point where I really think it's almost abuse of Parliament saying. So I really think in our report we'll make it clear. We should not accept this committee. We should refuse to accept the bill. Really. And we should draw this attention to leader of government business. Don't bring us a bill where you haven't come to some agreement. Point three is that it's point one really, it's about process. Point two is that I think that this committee needs to get tougher on the use of the national fiscus for the airline industry. The majority in this committee have argued before water, electricity, popular transport for the people, meaning buses, trains, taxi services, education, health, we feel very strongly should remain substantially, if not wholly, in state hands. Where the private sector comes in, we can't privatize. We should enter into public-private partnerships with them. But we have argued before, I've also gone on record on behalf of this committee and hence I have to say, we don't think that the airline industry is a basic human need for the airlines. While recognizing the reach is expanding of the low-cost carriers to lower middle-class people and even upper working-class people, and we recognize the value of these low-cost carriers, some of them are cheaper than taking a bus from Cape Town to Johannesburg these days. But it doesn't have the same category of need as the first few things I mentioned. Therefore, this majority in this committee do not feel the national fiscus should come to the rescue necessarily of these airlines if they don't deliver. It applies both to South African Airways and the smaller one. The next point is, I think, for me, and others can disagree, because my tentative view is the case for South African Express to be a Schedule 2 is frankly stronger than Infraco. I really do feel that, comrades, friends. They must convince me otherwise. You see, I really think Mani's point can be covered by point 2. That the report makes it very clear we're going to monitor this very carefully. And while I agree they're doing extremely well, we complimented you the last time you were here, there's no guarantee a year from now the managers might move on. One of them might become ambassador to Mongolia or something, and you know, you never know what will happen. Or they might open another company of their own and so on, you know. I mean, the illicit terrain, people move so fast, you know, we've been bewildered actually. Not least, look at me, where I'm going next week. Let's leave that aside, you can see it keeps coming up. Right. But the fact of the matter is, Stella, money is right to draw attention to the public purse being almost loot. Well, let me choose all that carefully. The place here, by the way. No. PMG is here somewhere. I don't know which is worse. I was going to use a certain word, Stella, I'll use with you if you're in tea time. The public purse being imposed upon unduly by airlines. You know, we South African Airways, well, I won't be here. I hope members are going to be tough because we think some management issues need to be addressed silently. Peter's not here. Fortunately, he's in another committee meeting because he would take another 10 minutes pouring out his feelings about his day. Now, I really feel the case for this is stronger than Infraco. You see, this is an entity that exists, it's doing well. Infraco, we don't know what it is, actually. Members have been asking me, what is it really? Who's there? And you'll have to report back on it, because members raised this to me last night. And I actually found myself in a flurry. So we'll deal with it later. So I would like to suggest that the problems money are raising, money, are not peculiar to you. I think we all feel the same way. But you're dealing with it with a wrong solution, I think. You're trying to say, okay, the way to deal with those problems, which I don't think you disagree on. If you see, you are not here, but if you speak to your colleague, Martin Stevens, when we did the South African Airways Bill, we raised similar issues with you. The difference is your solution is one I don't think the majority of us are going to agree with. We're not saying it's final, we'll discuss it on Tuesday. But I'm hinting to you that maybe, you know, you draft yourself a paragraph or two so that we monitor what's going on. I will deal with the first section. I really feel extremely strongly that this thing of dumping scheduling on us is just wrong. But money, you can deal with the paragraph about the fiscus and not coming to the aid, willy-nilly and so on. And then we look at a way apart from just saying, therefore it should be 3B. Money, the other point is that we have had quite a lengthy discussion of almost 2.5-3 hours in the study group. And we got in our own experts on 3 and 2B. Because we in the study group were divided on Infraco. And to some extent we still are, or we have to reach consensus by Tuesday. So we had our own, you know, your party has got its experts. We got our experts in. Not experts, but I mean relative experts, let's say. And we did thorough discussion. So I don't think we can agree with you. I think what you're saying about the distinction between 3B and 2 is less greater than you're making out, in my view, having heard everybody. And I've read CFMA, and I've discussed with Minister Manuel again yesterday morning in the caucus, and I've run his department, has spoken to three or four officials there. So, Mani, I've done quite a bit of work. Let's talk outside this meeting. The gap that you are making out is there, but it's not as extreme as you're making out. So the point is accepted. But finally, the solution lies, I think, not in Mani's answer, but in several other things we need to do. And the PFM is being amended, and I think we also need to look at Schedule 2s that are not performing. You see, if Mani is right that these people might 2 years from now be in trouble, then we must have a way of moving from a 2 to a 3B, and also the reverse, 3B to a 2. Because, you know, some of these state-owned entities, maybe they shouldn't be in 2. And some of them that are in 3B, maybe they should be in 2. At the time the PFMA was written, you know, conditions were different. So can we leave that there? We're not taking any decision. Okay, this is where we are. So, but people can comment on what I've said.
Chairperson, I agree with your statement that you made, that I think that the cabinet should come forward with a decision. You know, it's unfair to drop it on the committee, and we must take the responsibility and table it into Parliament. I think I agree with you 100% that we should actually refer this to cabinet to make a decision whether it's a 2 or 3B. Then the Minister and the Treasury is involved, because the Minister of Finance is a senior member of cabinet, and they must come with the final decision, because at the end of the day, it's the executive who will have to take responsibility in the future for this state of the enterprise.
Anybody else understand? Okay, can we move on to
Chair, just the indication on parking sites and note your point of view. Also, as you are aware, a process is underway to resolve it at the executive level. We will not proceed.
Your
point
is
on.
You're from now, you're bringing up an SOP, we're returning the bill to you unless you've got a schedule there that's cabinet is used. Is anybody disagreeing with that?
The fact that the negotiations taking this late hour is exactly the point we're making. We don't want it. It must be there before you present the bill.
Let alone
before you bring the bill to Parliament. I think the public has a right to know, even before it comes to Parliament, what is the schedule.
You understand, Ken, your point is irrelevant, to the point we're making.
Chair, I wasn't trying to make a point. I was just saying we note, and I just informed you that the process is underway.
No, in fact, we've
adopted it. We've adopted it.
Can we move on then? I'm pleased to say I went to the bill, and Peter,
who's a pain, by the way, opposition, let me tell you, because he raises so many thousands of questions. That's not the reason we sent him to another committee, let me add, because he's very valuable, but not this committee, and we all respect his views. He went to the bill, too, and I drove him here from, this morning at a car problem, and he told me, look, he went through the bill. Apart from one issue that he wants to raise, and I thought Sandra here and I will meet, he's going to come here later over lunch to address that issue. He thought the bill is fine as it is. Kumisa Konlo is on leave for today. Eric Kolwani is also not available. Zunaid Koto, what's happened, brother? Yeah, Zunaid is on his way. Okay. So apart from that, the entire committee is accounted for. Okay. And can we, Sandra, deal with the long process-wise, what is the most practicable and user-friendly way? Do you want us to look at your text that you gave me, which has got Word Microsoft Word amendments already on it, or shall we first go to fill as we have it?
Chair, I think we need to follow your guidance there. If it can be unnecessarily time-consuming going clause by clause, if you don't have any comment on it, we can explain to you what our recommendations are. They're mostly alignment recommendations, but it's really in your hands in terms of how you want to manage time.
He's one of my records. Zunaid is close to 100% attendance, so it's a bit unfair on him. Just meeting him. Okay, but the point is, Maybe it's simpler, Sandra. What we do is, let's proceed with the bill as it was certified and given to us, and then wherever you've introduced an amendment, you turn us to the text. Call it version A, let's call it version 1, version 2. Version 2 has everybody got this thing. That's got South African Express Bill summary of proposed amendments. And then attached to it is where the amendments actually are. So I think using the summary and using version A side by side, maybe that's the best way. Everybody got the summary? Okay, good. Right. Let's go through the bill as we've got it. Version 1. Summary is version 2. Okay.
As far as the long title is concerned, there are certain of the provisions of the bill that are not captured in the long title. Therefore, we recommend that after the first sentence before the semicolon, we insert the following wording: to provide for the main objects and powers of South African Express Proprietary Limited, semicolon, to provide for the borrowing powers of South African Express Proprietary Limited.
Can I propose we adopt it? It's a straightforward matter. It flows from the Infraco bill. We don't need. We deal with. Everybody's here now. We wanted your advice on something, but we'll come back to you on that. Anyway, the point is, can we adopt the. What we've done, Bongi Kosi, today, is they gave us an input, an overview, which to some extent overlaps with what they gave us some months ago. And now we're going to close by close, okay? So we've got two versions, version 1, version 2. So if you turn to page 3 of version 2, you'll see it. Can I propose we are agreeing this time? You see, as you know, the way, I can only speak for myself and the older guard. Let's call us the older guard of chairpersons, okay? I can't speak for this new lot. The way we do with the bills is, first of all, it might be useful for people just to understand. And also, what we used to do is, we're going to call it phase 1. Okay, it's something I've thought about, but other chairs also seem to use the same thing. Where we get the conceptual issues here, like this overview, and then you take us through the bill and tell us what the bill is about conceptually and take us through line by line. That's phase 1. Phase 2 is we go through it. Phase 1, if there are policy issues like Schedule 1, we finish all those as far as possible. In phase 2, how's it go? Phase 2, we go through clause by clause, because we now agreed on we understand the conceptual issues, we've got the briefing, and we finalize the policy issues. Then we go through it clause by clause, phase 2. That's when we take the public submissions and put them side by side and say, in clause 4A, this is what the public said, clause 5B. Which reminds me, this bill was also gazetted for public hearings, but we received none, is that correct? Well, I mean none. So there's no submissions for the public, so we in phase 2, we won't have to do that. What I am suggesting, members, because it's a relatively straightforward bill, we combine phase 1 and phase 2. So it's faster. Because it's not a controversial bill. In fact, the only policy issue, it seems to me, is the scheduling. Okay, is that agreed? So we combine phase 1 and phase 2. In which case, can I suggest we accept the long title as amended? We don't come back to this unless somebody finds something earth-shattering in you. We'll vote on this bill next Friday. If all goes well, next Wednesday. Okay, next move to the preamble.
Chair, excuse me, in the preamble, first paragraph, what we're communicating is the intent to retain South African Express Airways as a strategic asset for the state to preserve its ability to provide frequency of services, particularly on lower density routes.
in the second paragraph, we reflect the state's desire to geographically contain the operations of South African Express Airways, and you will see that it provides for its capability to provide services on within South Africa and to the African continent and surrounding islands.
Okay. No comment. By the way, in the processing of the bill, the friends from South African Express can speak, you can speak, you know, anybody wants to speak can speak. Because we're not technical experts and you might have insights. So you might want to also amend the bill. So you are free to speak. Anybody wants to speak. Okay. Very quickly, can I just ask a question, Sandra? To provide frequency of services, is that grammatically the best? Is that clear enough?
I think that's the way in which the effectiveness of the operations is being prescribed or being.
Is that the language of the airline? Because I thought to say to provide frequent services. Why frequency of services? Frequency doesn't tell you how frequent. Frequent says it's very often. There's a different meaning in the English language as I understand it. But hey, if you people speak like that, who am I to question you? I'm not an expert. I haven't got 6 months to find an expert to draw the distinction. Sir, I'm not being reasonable or I'm being difficult. If I'm being difficult, you're free to tell me you're being difficult. And if the members say I'm feeling difficult, I'll withdraw. But frequency of services doesn't tell you how frequent. You say frequent services, it tells you frequent.
Sure, I think the distinction that you're drawing is in fact real. However, I don't think our intent is necessarily to prescribe at this point in time in a restrictive way how frequent the services should be. What we are trying to say is that there must be services available.
You don't want to say to provide adequate frequency of services? No. Why not? It's fine, I'm probably wrong. I'm just doing my job. Just deliver to us an answer and I'll give it.
Mr. Chairman, the word adequacy brings subjectivity into it.
Does anybody else want to pursue it? Okay, I'll drop it. Fine. That's the way you speak. It's fine. Okay, the next thing is, you know the notion of regional, Sandra. Can regional be both within the country and outside it? You see, like regional, sometimes we use the word regional to mean within the country, a region, say the clustering of three provinces, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and Gauteng. That's the region. Right? Sometimes we use region to mean within the Western Cape. A region within it. But we also mean region to mean the Southern African Development Community. So, can you say to the expansion of regional air services within South Africa and to the African continent? Is that the way you guys speak? It's fine. I'll give it. But hey, as a layperson, reading that, you're either regional within the country or you're regional. You can't use regional in two senses. But is that the way you speak? Yeah.
No, I was saying unless we define it, I also have the same difficulty I had. Unless under definition we define what do we mean about this region, then that can assist.
Can I just make a comment? That, I mean, we probably, should be swapping that regional air services to feeder, because I think that's what we're trying to describe.
Mr. Chairman, I think the concept regional within this wording is combined with e-service, and that is a specific connotation in the airline industry. It means feeder services and finner services. So the concept doesn't relate to region as part, you know, it carries on the sentence relating to South Africa and the continent, but the focus of the word regional is combined with e-service, which has a specific aspect. So it depicts the type of service.
Sorry, do you want to say that?
I was saying that, that's exactly why the alternative to that is to call it a feeder, because that's what it was doing. It was describing the type of service that we're offering.
Well, we could put both words, I'm not sure, but we don't make it clumsy, because it's actually a preamble. But bombing cost it for Sandra.
I was saying if what they are saying, it does make sense, because it's a regional air service capability within South Africa and to the African continent. It seems to be covering the designation of our region here and also moving out.
Yeah.
I don't feel so strongly about it. I raise it because it's my job to do so, okay? Right. Sandra?
I would just like to check for the purpose, as you always indicate, there's a certain intent now that in 10 years' time other people will be reading this. Just as a point of clarification from Santa's side before we move on, whether in terms of describing the service, feeder is an appropriate and perhaps more descriptive. Is it in any way narrowing?
I wonder if it's feeder rather than regional.
Because my understanding of the word regional is that it's not necessarily contained in constitutional or sovereign boundaries, and thus it could be within South Africa, it could transcend South African boundaries, but it is within a certain common interest reach, and that I think the distinct nature of your services are actually feeder as such, isn't it?
The description of regional earth service is the same as feeder. I just thought that we could swap it. So I would be comfortable that we leave it as is. If there's a requirement to probably define it somewhere else in terms of what we mean by regional earth services.
Yeah. If you can suggest a way forward. You see what's worrying me a bit? If we put feeder, surely you can have a regional service that's not a feeder. So feeder is a bit narrower than regional. And Bonikos is right, and so are you. Andrew, is it? Jochem also. Why don't we just leave it? Instead of looking at this thing always wholly from the point of view of a layperson, this is not a local government piece of legislation, but thousands of councillors have to interpret it. It's an airline industry, and this is the way you people speak. And therefore, I mean, you know, we just wanted it to be more user-friendly. But mustn't confuse user-friendliness with oversimplification. Okay, so I think let's leave it. This is the way you guys speak. You understand what it means. Let's move on. Shall we drop definitions because we usually come back to them? And let's go to object of act on page 3 of version 1.
The objects we've covered in our presentation, just to highlight that, first of all, chronologically, first to provide for the transfer of SACs to from Transnet to the state. We would then like to follow with a recommendation that we insert a new B that reflects the heading of Section 4, which is the main objects and powers of SACs. That be followed by the insertion of a new C, which would address the borrowing powers of SACs, and then finally we provide in D, new D, for the potential conversion of SACs to a public company. That would basically cover the main objects of the Act. At this point in time, we haven't yet provided, based on the earlier discussion that we had, for any scheduling, and if there's any such recommendation based on your indication, would be dependent on a resolution first from Cabinet.
All right. Can we look at page 4 of version 2, and if you can see the underlying DCB in the order. Any comments, members of us? Nope. So shall we accept A, B, C, and D, all of them, but there's a possibility of an E coming. Because you kick off all the four, you kick off everything so far, the preamble, the long title, and now A, B, and C, and D. And so we all put in our notes, E question mark, and schedule it, and come back to our game like that. Okay, transfer of tax shares and tax agents?
Let me first say that we are not recommending any changes to this provision. This provision corresponds with the similar transfer provisions in the South African Airways Bill. It is different from
only different from the Infraco bill insofar as the type of assets and interests that are being transferred are, for obvious reasons, different. What I would like to highlight is that as part of the transaction, we have defined the interests, i.e. the claims, liabilities, rights and obligations that are being transferred. So in 3.1a, we provide for the Minister, Transnet and Minister of Finance to determine by way of agreement which of those claims and assets, rights and liabilities of SACs will continue to be SACs interest. In other words, which of those will be remain with Transnet and that which would go with SACs. The consideration that is to be paid by government for the Transnet interest in SACs, that would be essentially be a sale of shares and loan account if relevant. The section 6 of 3.2 provides, as in the case of the SIA Act and the Infraco Bill, for a debt-locking mechanism should the Minister and our Minister and Transnet not agree on the terms and conditions of the agreement. In that case, the Minister of Finance can finally determine or the, our Minister determines the basis of agreement in concurrence with the Minister of Finance. In 3.3, the impact of the transaction is addressed. Essentially, the impact being that the state becomes the direct shareholder in SACs, and our minister is effectively appointed as the shareholder representative on behalf of the state in relation to the rights of shareholder in SACs.
Any questions? This is fairly conventional now. We're getting used to this clause. Shall we adopt it in total? It means completely, unless members find something new between now and Tuesday, or Wednesday next week, this is adopted as is. At this rate, we'll be finished, I think, Sandra. You can fly back and be at your office by 1 o'clock. Karen?
Chair, the next provision addresses the main objects and powers of SACs.
I should go back to my front page.
We've got a motion one.
Chair, if you look at the front page, we are actually recommending a rearrangement of sections, and that's why I went to the main object. The bill that was published actually had a different sequence of sections.
Now, okay, because you're bringing, okay, members, I think I know what's going on here. 4 on version 1 is going to be moved down, and then 6 on version 1 is going to be moved up. As a consequence of organizing it sequentially, now that you've put the objects the way you have, it's dealing with it chronologically, consistent with what we did with the Infraco Bill. Good? Okay.
Exactly.
So let's then turn to version 2. And turn to page, what page will we turn to?
That's
page
4.
Yeah, okay.
In terms of 4, Chair, the, excuse me, the main objects of Infraco are to first to engage in passenger and cargo and mail services in terms of air charter and other related aviation services. So the type of services that SACs can provide is not necessarily limited. However, it is limited in relation to the geographic area, i.e. the Republic and the African continent. That's in 4.1. In 4.2, we provide, in the case of SIA and Infraco, for Infraco to continue having the same, despite the fact that we have defined object for InfraCo in 4.1, that doesn't mean to say that the powers that InfraCo as a company would have would be affected by 4.1 and it would continue exercising such powers. And in 3.3, our 4.3, we also provide that, there we provide for some editorial changes, and those are just to actually be clear that the powers of SACS would include the common powers that provided for in Schedule 2 of the Companies Act and would not exclude any of those powers. Chair, just you may recall that when we went through the InfraCo Bill, we checked Schedule 2, and Schedule 2 essentially defines those powers that are germane to companies as separate juristic persons. So that is what is provided for in 2 and 3. In Clause 2, we've just made a grammatical correction.
Okay. Can I just ask you a quick question? This last one, when 3, I know you said including must also make it clear what it means and end the Daniel could deal with you, right? But, I mean, look at that 3. I mean, is it really necessary in that context? Look, you've got the powers of sex include common powers contained in Schedule 2 of the Companies Act, right? And none of those powers are excluded or qualified. I mean, you really have to say, and none of those powers. Then why don't you go to your original, which says the powers of sex are set out in Schedule 2? The original version is better.
Chair, I tend to agree with you. Can I just indicate to you that in the case of 4.3, we are also following the trend in terms of current use of language in other legislation with similar provisions. So we're trying to continue the example set in other legislation. Very recent legislation on establishing companies, for instance, 3B companies, the water agency. Exactly.
Let's be realistic. If you use the word include, right, then I realize you've got this problem. It's absurd, right? Actually absurd, but you say that's what the courts do. And the courts need to review, you know, I don't know, this old order stuff. Maybe it's pre-1994. Now, members, can we remind ourselves what they say? They say that you must say the powers include something or the other and do not exclude. It's like repetitive. Right? I mean, it's really silly. Then we ask them this thing, they say, okay, no, the law is... Okay, they said, fine. But then there's a way out, Sandra. You gave it to us. You're just saying, the powers of SACS are set out in Schedule 2 of the Companies Act. Now we got, instead of that, hey guys, before you reply, Sandra, who thinks the powers of... You can speak in this meeting, by the way. You're a lawyer as well. So I don't know why you're blobbing in. You can speak. We allow you to speak. You're a South African, aren't you? You can speak. Even if you're not a South African, you can speak, because maybe you're in the airline industry in Malawi, who knows, and you're my partner. The point is, the powers of sex are set out in Schedule 2 of the Companies Act version 1, comrades, please. And then, the powers of sex include common powers contained in Schedule 2 to the Companies Act, and none of those powers are excluded or qualified. Sure. Now, let's hear the members, really. I mean, we might do it procedurally, because that's what you're doing, but Sandra, really, those members in the other committees, they need to follow us. You're not going to follow them, always. Come across it. And then, what are you?
Chair, so we'll raise more or less the same thing. Lulu, Chair, watch us. We're battling to understand just that we don't have the TFMA or another act here. That whether there's another act which seeks to undo or to exclude these powers, and that's why we need to be explicit around that particular issue. Unless if there is such a thing, then one will understand why they are putting it like this and so on. Yeah.
My main concern, we are saying that none of these powers are excluded or qualified. So I was asking myself if there is any act on this that qualifies the powers of the company, maybe like the PNA contest qualifications. So you might find that by putting this clause as it is right now, we are undoing whatever was done in the PNA. On behalf of the committee.
I didn't say you can make decisions on behalf of the committee.
If I may, first of all, I think the the rationale behind including this extra wording is that if, from an interpretation point of view, there may be case law where there was the powers of the company have been defined in a way that could be interpreted as constraining the generic powers that are assigned to a company in terms of the Companies Act. And therefore, that wording. I need to also indicate to you that keep in mind that in the case of state-owned enterprises, that if there is conflict between the Companies Act and the PFM Act, PFMA, the provisions of the PFMA prevailed. So it's really only in relation to the Companies Act that we, that the, this provision essentially provides that if when you interpret the Companies Act and provisions may appear contradictory, you must rather read them as each one on its own, unless the PFMA overrules that contradiction. So my suggestion is really that I think the in terms of an interpretation guide, this provision is much clearer than the simpler wording.
Okay, I'm not wholly convinced, but fine, I'll live with it, okay. 4-1, 4-2 we adopt. 4-3, can we just leave it flight abeyance? Let me mull over it and other members mull over it. But for now, we will agree with you, Sandra, unless we come with a formidable argument. I really am not wholly convinced, but on the other hand, you know what? We're not going to tie in a ditch about this. Okay? But what we're pleading with people like you is to, next time you craft those or you get a team to craft it, is to actually sometimes set the path rather than just follow the detours that other committees have made and so on. That's the issue really. But I'm not wholly convinced, but it's fine, we'll live with it for now. Yes, Sandra?
Gee, I thought that it may be of value to you just to give you a sense of the common powers that we're talking about, if it is of value to you. Perhaps just from a drafting approach point of view, the department relies heavily on the extent to which the state law advisors actually is up to date with the extent to which legislation and legislative provisions, the standard provisions, have been tested. And for that purpose, when we do break new ground, we break it in areas where we feel that innovation is particularly within our domain. But the application and management of the Companies Act is not necessarily within our domain, and for that reason, we would not necessarily set a new trend. As far as the common powers of a company is concerned, and there's a list as almost as long as the alphabet. But to give you a sense of the type of powers, they relate essentially to the power to transact, to purchase, to sell, to acquire, to borrow money, to secure mortgages, to lend money, to invest, to operate bank accounts, etc., etc. So in relation to appoint agents, principals, etc., this, as far as this list of powers are concerned, what we have provided for in 4.2 and in 4.3 is that the definition of, or the description
of powers in 4.1 would not be limiting to the exercise of the common powers in terms of the Companies Act. However, as a function of the prevailing law in terms of the PFMA, if there was a case of interpretation and there was conflict, and if there was also conflict with the PFMA, the provisions of the PFMA will prevail and not this.
Okay. We live in the vents, but we, you know, I don't know if Mr. Intwana wants to say anything. Kulimeko, do you want to say anything?
Morning, Mr. Chef. When I look at this provision, I think there was a provision in Infraco which was almost similar to this. I don't know.
I don't say that there's
something bad, but to an ordinary person, it can be difficult to understand the provision, because our intention is to make the laws simple to everyone. But as for now, I don't have a standpoint, but I have to relook it because I was just in the provision this morning. Yeah.
Now, maybe you can look at it and see whether you can come back with something that's more readable, but also meets Sandra's needs. Okay. In borrowing powers of tax?
Can I just check in terms of four, so it's partially adopted?
No, it's
not adopted.
Well, partially adopted is more accurate, yes, sorry. It is partially adopted, it's not a big deal. Okay, borrowing powers, please.
Chair, the borrowing powers is subject to the Public Finance Management Act. It's just a confirmation of the fact that the company can exercise borrowing powers. If it is decided that it's a 3B, those borrowing powers would be constrained in terms of the rules applicable to it. If it's a
3B, yeah, then money is going to reply and all that stuff. Okay. Where do you say here 2B or 3? You don't say it even in your amendment.
No, I was just in terms of the implications of this.
I understand, but what is the proposal now? We're going to put in a... You are suggesting that we put in clearly that it's a Schedule 2. Where would that appear?
Chair, that would, to conform with the sequence of provisions in the other legislation, it would be an insertion of a new Section 9.
Oh, you haven't provided
that? No.
Next point is, borrowing powers, then we can adopt
as it is, because it's not impacting directly on scheduling. The text, at least, isn't. Is that correct? Because it's simply making a generic point that it's subject to the PFMA. Is that correct, Sandra?
Exactly.
So whether it's Schedule 2B or 3 is neither here nor there, insofar as this particularly adopts this, thank you. Conversion? Oh, this is a standard one, eh? Don't spend a lot of time. We're familiar with it, and can members read the text rather and see, for those of you who haven't read it yet. I read it two nights ago, and to me it seems we can adopt it immediately. There's nothing to explain there. Can members just quickly read it? Alright, 6.1 can be adopted. I think we should adopt the whole thing as one. But you read it quickly, I give you some time. I've read it, I think it's fine.
It is, Chair, it's exactly the same as in the Infracobel, and again, this is this conforms with the latest provisions in terms of state-owned enterprises, be that Schedule 2 or 3Bs, that's contained in national legislation. We just basically took it from...
And the cost of everything is exactly the same as well, isn't it? We've been through that.
Exactly.
Can't you just do a little checking for us? In the meanwhile, we adopt this thing. Okay. Ms. Intwana will come back to us and say if there's any cross-referencing that's irregular. We don't want a paper done. All we want to do is just check. Okay. You can just check it with the Infracobel, basically. It's exactly the same. Okay, we agree with the whole of section 6. Mr. Tana will just come back. Sorry?
Yeah.
Chairperson, is it possible that I can just come back because I was trying to attract your attention on the main object and powers of the sex on the... Can I just mention there something, please?
Yes.
The main object of sex is to engage in the transport of passengers, cargo, and mail and other charters or other related aviation services. What does that mean? Because, why not related aviation services? Why do you spell out a couple of services and then actually made it open? Related aviation means everything, or if it stays related, it can be in conflict with the preamble where we say low density routes. Now, other can also mean other routes.
But you speak for yourself.
My question is, if it refers to other related, it can be in conflict with the preamble where you specifically say lower density routes.
Just explain to us, Sandra.
Chair, my understanding is what Mr. Van Dijk is saying is that the reference other is superfluous. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it might include now, it might change the whole preamble to say it's not only lower density routes, but high density routes, etc.
You can't look at other without looking at related next to it. And therefore, I mean, I don't agree that money is a problem, but maybe there is. I can't see it. Can the lawyers help us? All of you lawyers, please. By the way, I can't keep insisting that people speak in the committee. This is the only committee I know in this whole parliament that allows anybody to speak. And this is the parliament of the people. This is how parliament should be as far as possible. Ultimately, there comes a time when members say, no, we've taken this thing as far as we can, we're here to govern and pass legislation, we only are going to speak. But that's the agenda of ours, it's only day one. In fact, we're going to finish 3 hours earlier than I imagined. Sandra? And can all the lawyers speak? Is there a problem with other related?
My belief is that other does refer to related. I don't have any doubt in my mind as to that. Whether one needs to say other related or just and related is another matter. And that's what I thought initially Mr. Van Dijk was saying. But there's no doubt that other refers to related.
Okay.
Yes, Chair. When you say any other related, according to me, that's too wide. I mean, it can mean anything. I think it should be limited.
How are you
going to
do that?
To say, as Sandra said, perhaps take out the other and say, and related efficient services.
Okay,
Thanks, Commissioner. When I look at the clause, I can agree with Sandra, because if you are talking about other, is related at the same time. I can fully agree with Sandra.
It doesn't make any difference for me. You can leave it as other related or related to me, it wouldn't matter that much.
Anybody else want to say anything?
Yeah.
I see a problem
with
it.
Please.
I won't die with this about it.
To me, I think the most important word is related. Not just any other. They have to be related.
Sorry, I think the word which would be problematic there, if there was any before other, if that would be white, I see nothing wrong, really.
What's your final take?
The point is just related services are mandated here. And other is linked to related. So if you drop other, I don't think it's going to have a material difference. Having it in there, I don't believe changes the meaning either.
No, sir. I think let us leave it as it is.
You see, the issues you are raising of any other, that's what is opening it wide. But if there is no any, as you are saying, other relationship.
But everybody, you're correct to raise the issue. And that's what we are meant to do. And we must be painstaking attention to detail. This is law after all. I think, Mani, unless you've got something new to say, we don't agree.
If it's related.
Sorry?
If it's related, why is it relevant then? You can leave out the related, the other out then. If other and related is connected with each other, it's just an expression twice. Why don't you just delete it?
That's not quite what we're saying. If you read the main or the crux of the or core of the services, it's passengers, cargo, mail, air charters, and essentially services that relate to passengers, cargo, mail, and air charters.
Give an example.
There's maintenance was mentioned by Chisa. She can come up with other.
Ground handling, Mr. Chair. Ground handling, passenger services, catering, those type of issues.
Slipped me out. I thought of it on Tuesday. You see, you got the main object I'd love to engage in transport. Why you got cargo and mail and mail? Why haven't you got cargo, comma mail? Why are cargo and mail lumped together?
Mr. Chairman, if I could answer that, in the bilateral agreements under the Chicago Convention, all three are distinctly different. Mail is a separate thing that also is dealt with under the Bern Conventions on the postal services. So, unfortunately, it is cargo, but it is in a different category, being run by another set of conventions.
Is that how you use cargo and mail in a sentence? Normally, you'd have cargo, comma, mail for the average person, but that's your language. Okay, we accept that. No way of proving that's your language. We take your word for it. You may be giving us your honest opinion and not misrepresenting us, but where's the expert from our side, from Parliament side? To tell us whether that's true or not. Where's the expert? We don't have an expert. Where's Boscacci? You can't be an expert on everything, okay? So anyway, and our expert, by the way, is not here, Peter. He's elsewhere.
Chen, I just wanted to say that if Joachim was wrong, then we would essentially have bad language, but I don't think it would change in terms of the interpretation.
No, impact of the language, actually. I was talking about interpretation. Thank you. So let's go to the next clause. We have to look at your text now. Isn't it version 2? It's number 7. No, we go back to 6. The word conversion. We go back to, we've done that, so we are 7, effect of conversion.
That's correct, and then page 5 of that.
Okay, this is the standard one I'm going to explain. Members, just read it, it's exactly what you had in Infraco, is it?
Yes.
Because he said he's slightly hesitant.
No, I was considering explaining, and then I realized that
it's a pity some members who are very critical of me are not here, because I want to impress them. We finish the bill so fast. In fact, the two people here that are most critical of me are not here. So can all the members inform them what time we finish? We're about to finish. What else is there? Next one is regulations.
No, you
don't believe me.
Sure.
We finish. Is there anything else, members? No. Hopefully. But even if we finish before tea time, what time is it?
7.
Hey, Peter's going to get stunned. Hey, Kumita. Hey, where's Comrade Carla? She just phoned her. And tell her. Okay, carry on, Sandra. Now, who's holding us up? Sandra, is not.
Gina, I just wanted, and I don't want to belabor the point or discuss it any further, but just to flag again that when the executive resolves the scheduling issue, we may come back with a recommendation that we insert a new section before the regulation section that will address the scheduling.
Unless we disagree,
that our tentative view is that it should be a Schedule 2, but we have many, many reservations about SAA and SAA Express's future, and we think those things should be dealt with by National Treasury in other ways other than making it a 3B. So we're more decisive about this particular entity on this matter. And Infraco will come back to you. That's our tentative view. Is there anything you need to discuss it, comrades, friends? Mani will have his reservations. You can also communicate to the department minister what Mani feels. No, on 2B and 3, this is right. We can't force him. And then he's going to join the ANC. He can cross the floor if he wants. But that is perfectly consistent with what his party says.
I don't.
Yeah, but the difference is.
I don't share Schedule 2 is more market related ideology than 3B.
Mani, are you sure that is really? You see, if you look at you guys and what you argue, by the way, Mani, fortunately for the last three members we had before you in this committee, they were all relatively sophisticated. But there was a time that we had a member from your committee and from your party in my committee, or our committee, not this one, where I would explain, listen, my friend, what you are saying is not consistent with your own party. Right? And then I would explain what is the DA view. And I explained it much better than him. And moreover, he was agreeing with us. And at the point that, no, but you are in the Democratic Alliance. And this is what your party thinks. Now, Bogenkosi is trying to do the same with you, Mani, on this issue. But isn't he right? Okay, Mani, isn't he right to say? He's right. It's an interesting point. He's right. It's very good. He's making the point. Am I right? You can correct me, right? Am I right, Eugenia? The point is, you are really calling for state control from above, that is National Treasury, to contain these this company. Whereas, what you should do is allow this company to operate without restrictions. Let the market decide. Either they will survive, or they will collapse according to market criteria. So shouldn't you, more than us, we should be arguing your case for 3B. Okay, explain.
You got it wrong.
Now they can operate, and if they run into a loss, because it's a public entity, they will go back on to the Minister of Public Enterprises. He will add it in his MTF in the budget. He will go to the Minister of Finance and say, this is part of the Department of Public Enterprise. So that is then, they can carry on as they wish, because at the end of the day, they know the taxpayer will come to their rescue.
But you see, what we are saying as a committee is that we're going to make this clear. Both these airlines that are state-owned, they don't deliver. I think that's the view of Treasury at the moment, isn't it, Sandra? They sink or swim. But the national part is not coming to their rescue. I mean, Trevor hinted that sometimes it's almost explicit. Is that not correct?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Can I ask members
to just... Sorry, we finished. The process issues are the following. One is... don't have to meet next Tuesday, then. What are we going to meet on Tuesday for? Because Wednesday, what we do is we meet with both bills, Infraco bill with the amendments, and we can confer over the phone over the outstanding issues. At this stage, I don't see a point. Bonani, what would be the point of us meeting on Tuesday? What would be the point? Because really, we're voting either Wednesday or Friday next week to give them time. Sorry, Sandra?
Chair, I just wanted to check with you and may influence your decision on Tuesday. You've adopted all the provisions except for partially, and then we still have the scheduling issue, which is our responsibility. Will you be addressing these outstanding matters also on Wednesday, or do you need me to do that on Tuesday? I don't know. I just wanted to bring it to your attention. And then I wanted to just...
Well, I'm not clear what you're asking. What do you mean address outstanding? What outstanding matters?
Let's put aside the scheduling issue for a minute.
Right.
Section 4 was only partially adopted. So, yes. You wanted us to come back on 4.3.
Only 4.3. 4.1 and 4.2 are adopted according to my notes.
Okay.
4.3. Sorry, yes,
Melissa. Sorry, Commissioner. According to my understanding, in connection with 4.3,
yeah.
we are going to meet with Sandra and come with a better version. I don't know whether when do you expect a better version.
How big a problem is this? I mean, surely you can let us have it on Tuesday morning.
Okay.
But we only need as a committee to consider it. We'll give it on Wednesday. All I need is a chair. And there's no chair, co-chair. Maybe that's a lesson I'm learning, eh? No need for co-chairs. Your pastor Bill goes, anyway, I'm teasing, of course. This bill is much easier. I mean, anybody could have done it as faster. You've done someone who's done it faster than me. The fact of the matter is, we don't need it on Tuesday. You will let me have a check by Monday afternoon, Tuesday morning. I just need to look at it, send it out to the members via Bonani. That's all on that issue. Point two is, on the scheduling thing, you're going to come back to us. We are giving you a deadline. Tuesday morning, 10 o'clock, tell us what happened on the scheduling thing, both in terms of the infracobal and this one. Wednesday we meet in the committee, not for long, to hopefully adopt this bill, and I suspect the infracobal we won't be ready to adopt, but hopefully the bug bill. Otherwise we reconvene on Friday. So we don't need to sit for 3 hours either, Bonani, on next Wednesday. So we don't meet on Tuesday, then call it off on the order paper. We meet next Wednesday, I imagine not for more than 20 minutes on this bill, and I don't know about the infracobal. So we can finish within an hour. If we vote on both bills so much, oh, the report, I'll have to do the report. This bill, the report is going to be very brief. The infracobal, I'll draft it and send it to you over the weekend so we both finalize it. So we have to adopt the report. We can adopt the report informally on Wednesday. Okay, what else is there? Voting course has pointed out something that nobody else, see, even money sleeping. He looks like a big deal. We haven't adopted, Sandra, the definitions. I forgot, so can we quickly do it? Very straightforward, but he's right, we haven't adopted it. If only because he's becoming a very accomplished chairperson. Okay, company is actually straightforward, right? Can we adopt it? Conversion date means the date on which the conversion. Now, this cross reference thing will change 4-1, won't it?
Yes,
have you done it already?
Done it.
Okay, let's have a quick look. Look at version 2, page 3. It's now 6-1, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Okay, can you check all the cross-referencing and political policemen? Because they might have just typographically got it wrong. Legal Succession Act we can adopt. Minister for Public Enterprises, responsible for enterprises we can adopt.
Yeah, sorry.
Why do we need to add responsible? He is responsible. That's why he's the minister. What is the meaning of what is the change?
Basically what we're saying is that the title changes sometimes of departments. Tomorrow it can be public enterprises and health, who knows? Right? So that's why we say responsible for. In fact, all legislation must be through that. It's what we're suggesting to the state law advisors. We've covered this ground on infra. I don't think you were there. It's correct, actually. It's consistent with what we've done with the previous two bills. Sex means, the South African Express, that's obvious. Sex claims means all amounts owing. I've read through this stuff, right? So maybe I should give you a chance. Okay, tax claims, any questions? Okay. Sex interests? Sex shares? Well, it's Southern Express Limited is straightforward. South African Express Proprietary Limited is straightforward. State means, I don't agree with this ideologically, but it's neither here nor there. The law is accepted. This act includes any regulations in terms of Section 8. Is that Section 8 now? That might change. We can't adopt that, right? Depending on the scheduling. Or will it, isn't that right? You might have a new clause there.
Indeed, it will change if we address it.
Transfer date means the date of which transfer is finalized under the agreement with transmitted. Okay. Transfer date means obviously. That's it. Okay. Thank you all. See you next Wednesday morning. 10 o'clock now. It's only for 9 o'clock meeting.